Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
Alrighty, James. We are almost in March. The season's almost halfway over. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. The weather's starting to get nicer. The snow is melting, although I don't know if that's for good or not. So, and there's lots of news about vaccines and things in the world. You know, maybe things are going to go back to normal, quasi-normal here at some point.
Things are brightening up, and on that note, it's a big show for us. We have Steve Dangle on for the first time in what you have termed a crossover podcast. I like that.
Yeah, did you like my reference to The Simpsons when they had the critic on? Do you know that reference?
I vaguely recall that. I've actually been starting to watch The Simpsons again, like on Disney, and some of the old episodes are... I mean, it's obvious why it's been in the air for so long. Like, it's great.
Are there ones that you hadn't seen before? Like, have you ever seen that one with the critic? The critic was like a...
That sounds sort of very familiar. That's like when they went into witness protection? Or am I thinking of a different one?
No, I'm pretty sure the critic was the one where... The critic was another show, right? So they brought this guy on to like help promote the other show.
Oh, then no.
And the critic was another TV show. And I think they used The Simpsons as like a lead into it. John Lovitz was the critic, and he's this movie critic. I think it only lasted like two seasons or something. But he's on. Have you ever seen the one where there's like a film festival in Springfield? I'm pretty sure that's the episode.
No, so I haven't seen anything like since I was like 12. So like I'm way behind.
So you haven't seen like the early stuff then?
No, I've only seen like the really early stuff.
Okay.
Like I stopped watching then and now I'm picking back up.
The first like nine seasons are brilliant and then it kind of loses the plot. So that's where you want to focus your energy on is making sure you've seen everything. Like for me, I've seen every one of those old episodes like 10 times. So it would feel weird to try and go back and watch them again because there's some of them I just like already know off by heart. So
yeah, I think I'm thinking, James, and maybe I'm wrong. It was The Witness that maybe they did, the Harrison Ford movie. Is it possible they did that at some point in The Simpsons? Anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've spoofed lots of movies and stuff. But the critic was different because it was like some people could accuse them of like selling out because they had this other show on.
John Lovitz can be a lot to take. Like you need him in small doses.
Well, that's the thing. So he had his own show where he was the main character in an animated thing, and it was like really wacky, and it was all these inside references to like movies and stuff because it was basically like he was like Roger Ebert or something, and he had his own TV show, and it was ambitious. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, we are going to obviously chat about the season so far, 20 games, with Steve, but let's kind of look back a little bit before we look forward, and I guess look back again with Steve. The Calgary game, not a great game, but the Montreal game was better. Since we last talked, what's like the most pressing issue on your mind? I guess it really has
everybody's
to
getting hurt.
Injuries, yes.
Everybody's hurt.
Yes,
they have seven guys hurt right now, if you include Sandin, which I think you should because he might be playing if. You know, he was healthy. So, and it's not, I was looking at it today. It's like Muzzin, who you can argue might be the Leafs' best defenseman. If not, he's number two. He's your 1A and 1B, as you like to say. Uh-huh. And you got Muzzin out. You've got a winger from each of the top three lines. You got Thornton, you got Simmons, and now Hyman's hurt. You've got both your goalies are hurt. There's a lot of people hurt right now. So, and the good news, I think, for the Leafs is that almost all of these are like, as far as we know, they're not super long-term injuries. Although the Leafs haven't really been giving us,
no,
like we don't know Muzzin how long it's going to be. Like, we don't know what bone was broken in his face. And so we don't know exactly how long some of these injuries are. We don't know what's wrong with Anderson. We don't know exactly when Campbell or Simmons are going to be back. So there's a little bit of a guessing game here for us.
Well, I thought we would power rank the injuries in terms of their importance. So tell me if you disagree with any of this. I think it's pretty clear. Number one, Anderson. Number two, Muzzin. Number three, Hyman. Number four, Thornton. And then it's like whatever, Campbell, Simmons.
Well, I think the thing is that, like, Anderson's not as bad, not as big of a loss if Campbell is healthy and playing well. Then
that's
you're not,
TBD. We don't know that.
No, I know. But that's what I'm saying. If Campbell was healthy and playing well, then we wouldn't be saying Anderson's number one because it's like, well, we have another goalie that we like.
Maybe. I don't know that we can say that yet. There's still a very limited track record for Jack Campbell. Maybe. He's better than Hutchinson. I think that's
pretty clear. If he's playing well, then like...
Oh, I see. But that's a lot of ifs, I guess, is what
two.
I'm saying.
It's two ifs.
Yeah. The if rankings. I think I've done that before. I like
all that. I'm saying is I think that, you know, if you, like the reason Anderson's such a big loss right now is that they also don't have a backup either. So you're down to your third string goalie and...
Fourth string.
Most NHL teams are not going to win with their third and fourth string guys playing games. So.
Yeah. It's a funny thing with goaltender. We've talked about this before, and you and I talk about it a lot. They just don't seem to... Nobody seems to really want to be very hard on them. Michael Hutchinson, he's just what he is. And, like, that game on Monday night, that first goal is just... That can't go in. Like, it's really tough to win games when, like, you give up those goals, and yet they signed him to be their number four, and... Yeah. I don't know. Like it's really difficult to win with that kind of goaltending, and they saw that last year, and that's why they made the trade for Jack Campbell in the first place.
Well, I'll look around the league at the guys that are like your number three, four goalies. Like, there's not a lot of superstars there. They're guys that are probably going to let in three goals every game or more. So
yeah,
people are going to blame if they start losing some games here. People are going to blame Hutchinson, but it's.
Deserved. Well, it's probably deserved, but like, I mean, it's not his fault. He's just not that good.
But also what I would say too is that the Leafs have won a lot of games where like they haven't been the better team, and like they're pretty fortunate to have as good of a record. They're 14-4-2 right now. They're pretty fortunate to have a record as good as they've got right now. So
I don't know that that's true. Do you think that's true?
I do think that that's true. Yes. I do think that they have an extremely high shooting percentage. I do think that early on they won some games where they didn't play very well, and
but my counter would be that that's what you get when you have really highly skilled players, is you can win when like you're crap for two periods and you can just score twice in the third period and it's over in a minute.
Well, do you think they can maintain a 103 PDO for the whole season? I mean, like there's some things in their record that just aren't super sustainable that could catch up to them here in the next little while. And I mean, then you factor in some injuries and goaltending a little bit weaker, then it's going to compound all of those things.
Well, and at some point, well, I don't know this. Maybe Austin Matthews will just score every game. I can't really rule that out at this point. But the division is not good. That's the other thing. Like, we've been going back and forth on this a ton on Slack and texts and whatever. There's just not really any really good teams. Like, there's some okay, decent, good teams besides the Leafs, but Ottawa's bad. Vancouver's probably bad, although playing a little better of late. I don't know.
My only problem with blaming the division is I think it's getting over blamed.
I think it's under blamed.
No, I don't. Like, people on social media and stuff, and even in the media, are saying that, you know, they're diminishing what Matthews and Marner are doing because they're in a quote-unquote bad division. I mean, like, if you look at where all of the Canadian teams finished in the standings last year, it's not that bad of a... Like, it's not like they're playing... Like, look at the... what's the westernmost division? What are they calling it? Pacific or whatever? Look how many bad teams are in that division. San Jose, Anaheim, LA. I'm forgetting a couple. The Coyotes are there. Like, it's... I think the Coyotes are there. They put them in the Central this year.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, but James, the counter is like there's also Vegas, there's also St. Louis, there's also Colorado. So you have like three really good teams.
But there are definitely some divisions that it'd be interesting to Minnesota's also in that division too.
I don't know. This looks like the Canadian division looks like the worst division.
I guess it depends, Jonas, what you think about Edmonton and Winnipeg. Like Winnipeg in the games I've seen have been pretty impressive. Edmonton's obviously got the star power. I mean, the Oilers, where did they finish in the league last year? They weren't they like 9th or 10th in the league? Like the Canadian division's weird in that it doesn't really have like some high end teams, but it's got a lot of teams around the middle.
I think also looking back to last year, these teams are not the same. Vancouver's worse than last year. Ottawa is Ottawa. Winnipeg is probably a bit worse.
No one's saying Ottawa is good.
Yeah. I just think this is probably the worst division. But anyway, like, that's not to diminish any. I don't think they can only play the games that they're playing. And we're going to talk a bit about Matthews and Marner in a second. But let's, like, talk about the other kind of key absences, and that's Muzzin, and that's Hyman, and, like, to a lesser degree, Thornton. Of those two, which is kind of, like, more troublesome to you? Obviously, Muzzin feels like the one, but they really do have a bit of a problem, like, with their top six right now.
You know what concerns me a little bit, Jonas, is that a bunch of these things seem to be nagging things that guys are trying to... I mean, Hyman, obviously, with the shot blocks and everything is...
Yeah.
But, you know, like, what Thornton's now had multiple injuries, and he's 41 years old. You know, he's
the oldest forward in the league. This is what happens, right? Like, old guys get hurt sometimes.
I know all about that.
Right.
I live that every day. But it just seems like, and with Anderson, it seems like some guy, there's some wear and tear. They've played a lot of games. You know, the Leafs have played 20 games, which is, there's only one team, Vancouver, that's played more games than they have so far. And that's going to add up, you know, even with the lessened travel schedule. And it's a lot. It's a lot of wear and tear to cram 20 games into however many days we've been so far. Like, the season started on January 13th. Like, we're only 40 days in, and they've already played 20 games. You know, if you play every second day for months on end, we see it in the playoffs, you end up getting a lot of these kind of nagging injuries. And, you know, the luxury that the Leafs have is that they've started so well that they can be a bit more cautious with some of these things and give guys days off when they need to.
Well, and that's, like, something I think I'm surprised that they haven't actually done. And I will be surprised if they don't start to do is give these guys, like, the odd night off. Like, I really don't understand playing Joe Thornton on both ends of a back-to-back and 3 and 4 nights. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's not going to damage your lineup that much that he can't sit the second night against Ottawa. And now, granted, he had just come back from an injury, but he's 41. He's in his 23rd season. Like, I feel like there are ways to massage this. Like, I really like, and I don't know that this is something that other teams are doing across the league, but they started to do this last year, is when they don't play Frederik Andersen, he doesn't even dress. And I always thought it was stupid that when the backup or when the starter wasn't playing and you were resting him, you still made him, like, go through the entire routine of getting ready to play and just sitting on the bench. Like, why just, you know?
But Jonas, normally in a normal season, like, you don't have three goalies, right? Like, you know, a lot of teams don't have the cap space to have to carry three goalies. So, like, this year's kind of weird where you've got the third goalie just right there and you can do that.
Sure.
And I think that teams should probably do that a lot more often than they have been. And
yeah,
it seems like the Leafs only did that because Anderson was banged up.
No, well, they did it last year, the odd time. But anyway, like, the Muzzin absence, we should talk about for a second. I think there's two parts to it. I think one part I've been thinking of, is this really value or highlights how important TJ Brody is and how important that addition is, because he does a lot of similar-ish type things. Like, they're not the same player, but he can fill some of those roles and some of those spots.
Well, he can play difficult minutes, and they don't have a lot of guys that can do that. So,
and the other part of that is Travis Dermott. I'm very curious to see how much he actually plays and how much they use him and how they use him and all that stuff. However long Muzzin's out.
Well, I was surprised Lettinen's minutes actually dialed up a lot. Like, it wasn't just Dermott picking up the extra slack.
Well, Dermott didn't pick up any extra slack. That's what was sort of interesting. Now, there were 7 power plays in that game. But James, enough of our droning on about minutes. Do you want to introduce our special guest? You're always good at this, I think.
I am.
Yeah, I think you've gotten pretty good at it. You're like a host now.
I don't know about that. You're the one with all the broadcast background. I'm just a newspaper man. Well, we'd like to welcome in YouTube sensation. You know him as Steve Dangle. I know him as the right winger on my EASHL NHL 21 hockey team. It's Steve Dangle, Steve Glenn. Thanks for joining.
You're doing great. That was great.
I don't know about that. We don't have the same kind of energy that your show has.
It's a little different, eh? Yeah, well, you guys also talk about stuff and, you know, you actually say the North Division's the worst one. And I'm like, how is that possible? The Leafs are in it.
there's not as much yelling, Steve. Maybe you can dial us up here and you can bring some more energy to what we're doing.
Let's go. People probably listen to the Leaf Report to escape our nonsense. And now here I am. Here I am, kids. Sometimes here to ruin your day.
Sometimes we get accused of being boring, but I don't know. People keep listening and our audience keeps growing. So maybe we're not that boring.
No, you couldn't possibly be boring. You big James on the back end in EASHL, the most exciting player on our team in that we never know what you're going to do. come on, man. Come on. And Jonas, I would love to see Jonas with the controller.
Oh no, I'm not good at that stuff.
Neither am I. Still do it.
Well, Steve, I figured we could basically go in any direction we wanted with you because you're in the minutiae with us. Like, you know, we could talk about like past seasons. We could bring up like, I don't know. We could talk about like Jeff Hamilton when he played for the Leafs. We could talk about like Phil Kessel minutiae. But I think we should talk about like the most important storyline of the season so far for the Leafs first. And that's Matthews and to a lesser degree Marner. I was thinking, like, in all the times that you've watched the Leafs, have you ever been more excited about a player, like, personally than Matthews or Marner or Nylander? Like, where does this kind of rank for you?
No, never. I've always had a weird relationship with goalies. So, like, there is something special about going into every single game going, our goalie's going to win this game. And I've had that feeling a few times because the Leafs have been pretty blessed over my lifetime with some pretty miraculous starting goalies. There was like a decade where they all sucked, but you know, they've had some pretty good ones. But in terms of skaters, no, I've never felt anything like I have right now for Austin Matthews. My numbers are out of date because of the game last night, but heading into last night's game, I was talking about, you know, what's the greatest season in Leafs history? It's probably Doug Gilmour, 1992-93, 127 points, wins the Selke, finishes second in Hart voting. He had 127 points. The pace Mitch Marner was on heading into last game was 129.
Yep.
And if you think that's stupid, Matthews was 132, and he had 18 and 18.
Wasn't he on pace for 81 goals?
Something, I don't know. I say he does it, but I've never seen anyone with the touch of death like Austin Matthews.
Well, now adjust all those numbers for the eras that they're playing in, because I remember that Gilmour season, and like that wasn't the 80s, but there were a lot of goals going in back then. Like that was pre dead puck era, pre Hasek. Like that was when the Penguins and Lemieux were winning the cups. It was still pretty high-scoring hockey, and 130 points wasn't that unusual back then.
Well, and James, like, sorry to cut you guys off, but, like, that year, that Gilmour year, like, he's, like, I think Mario Lemieux might have had, like, 30 more points than him or something to win the scoring race, and I, like, I kind of think, like, Matt Sundin's career as a Leaf is probably, like, underappreciated, but he was never, like, you never thought he was the best player in the league. Like, I don't know that the Leafs have ever had this, where it's, like, he might be the best player in the league, maybe.
Yeah, the conversation, and here's how you know that Connor McDavid is still the guy to beat. The conversation starts with, is Matthews better than McDavid, right? Which should automatically put McDavid above him. But the season he's having, like, McDavid could win the scoring race by a pretty considerable amount of points, but if Matthews were to get 50 in 50, that hasn't been done. Like in its pure form, like without missing any games, it hasn't been done since 91-92. So it's such a special individual achievement that I think it should automatically get you the heart.
There's some question too. I mean, what if Edmonton doesn't make the playoffs? There's a lot of voters that don't that penalize players that don't make the play. I mean, they're in second in the division right now, so they're probably going to be okay. But
yeah,
there could be a real battle for that fourth and fifth spot if the Oilers struggle here. So. The whole idea of the heart coming down to a Leafs player and an Oilers player is going to cause some really significant. It's already, I don't know about you, Steve, but my social media timeline is already getting pretty I'm getting attacked a lot from my homeland in Western Canada right now, and it's all I am tweeting is like, Mitch Marner's on pace for 120 points, and I get like half of Alberta.
Dreisaitl's on pace for 130, James.
Oh, I wish they were that nice. I wish the messages I were getting were that friendly. But like, I'm not really like, I'm just saying what's happening. And
yeah, but you know what it is, James, and Steve, you can speak to this. There is a natural anti-Toronto. Toronto blows up everything. Like, they blow up their players to inflated points, and I think that's probably been true to various degrees over the years. That's not the case with this. You could even make the case that Matthews has been, like, league-wide perception, he's a little, like, underrated. Like, if you look last year, he finished 10th in Hart Trophy voting, and granted, like, a lot of that is the Leaf season. He had 47 goals in 70 games, and, like, if you look at some of the underlying numbers, he's, like, he might have been the best player, and he finished 10th. Like, Jack Eichel had more votes than him.
Oh, come on. And Jack Eichel was wonderful. He was great.
And the Sabres were terrible, right?
Like, they were awful. And you know what? So heading into the bubble, I did a video series called 70 and 7, where I took a look back at each of the Leafs' 70 games from the shortened season. And I split it into 10 game segments. And the sheer amount of times I was like, the Leafs looked off this night. But Matthews had 2 goals. The Leafs looked off this night, but Matthews did this. The Leafs were losing with 50 seconds to go. Matthews tied it. The Leafs were losing with 13 seconds to go. Matthews tied it. Like, it wasn't just the amount of goals. It's when they came. It's stunning how many goals he scored last year while the Leafs were behind or in the last minute or in overtime.
He gets the opening goal a lot. Like, he's way up there. And he often gets them on the board when they need it, too.
He'll get the opener and the winner.
Yeah,
he's been staggering lately, and so that's last year. This year he's even better. And when you're an even better version of the guy who still finished top 10 in Hart voting last year, you're in the conversation. Like, it shouldn't be controversial that a guy that's leading the league by 6 goals is in this conversation.
Jonas is onto something. Like, I wonder if playing for the Leafs might hurt you. Like, there's a lot of negative. Yeah. Negativity around the Leafs that, like, I wonder if it's close, if a Leafs player can't really win a major league award.
I think there's a lot of overcorrection, because I feel like members of the Toronto media will be hesitant to vote for a Toronto guy. But I think what could work in his favor is there are members of the media, I think, in other markets that will go out of their way to vote for someone in Toronto just to prove they don't have like an anti-Toronto bias. You know,
there's a lot going on. We need like a psychologist to break down how people are going to try and vote for this.
Yeah. Like, it's not just a numbers thing. There's a lot of, and like, you know, political and,
yes.
And there's a lot of geography in involved. It's
Western alienation. I know all about it.
Of course you do. It's, but like at the end of the day, if he scores 50 in 50, give the guy the damn trophy. It's got nothing to do with McDavid.
He's not going to be able to do that, though. Like, that's, it's impossible. Like, the only way that happened was when, yeah, I say he doesn't do it.
Wow, you're violating your brand. Well, get out of here.
It's, but I said this to Jonas because he wrote the piece, I think, last week, and it said, Auston Matthews can't get 50 goals, can he? And it was a great story looking at sustainability and whatever. But I just, in this era with how low scoring it is, I don't think it's actually possible to do it.
See, you know, so I've been paying attention to the era adjusted stuff, and I wrote a few pieces on it a couple of years ago. I haven't checked the numbers recently, but it feels like aren't we going into a higher scoring era now?
Like, it's a little bit. It is a little bit easier to score than it was like 3 or 4 years ago, like when Matthews entered the league. But it's going from like 5.8 goals a game to like 5.95, or like, it's, I was looking at this the other day because I wrote the Matthews story with the year adjusted stuff. Like, it is getting a little bit higher scoring because they've tweaked the way that like the power plays work, and you get the more faceoffs in the offensive zone and all that stuff. But it's like, it's not going to be anywhere close to where we were in the 90s.
Right. No, that was wild. It's crazy how aggressively it changed too. It was like right after like 95 or 6. Just everything turned off.
Every goalie started playing the way that that Patrick Waugh played. Like, Patrick Waugh, they won that cup in 93. He kind of, you know, he came out of nowhere there. And it really changed everything, because every goalie started playing with those new pads and the butterfly style. And they were like, the stand-up goalies were phased out. Like, I remember very well the 1994 Stanley Cup run, because the Canucks were there and they were against the Rangers. And Kirk McLean was an old school stand-up goalie who played amazingly and took them to the finals in 94. That became impossible like 2 or 3 years later. Like, those goalies just didn't exist anymore.
It's so funny to watch old hockey now. Back when going to bars was a thing, there was this one bar I would go to in Whippy that always had games from like the 70s and 80s on. And every goalie, like, it honestly looked like me shooting a YouTube video. Like, the one that they always show, the Habs Bruins, the famous, that should have been offside goal. What's he doing? He's falling backwards. That's it. Like, I just don't understand. And I meant to bring this up on my show yesterday, because we were sort of talking about this. The damage the dead puck era did to the sport, because the introduction of the dead puck era sort of happened when Michael Jordan was going for ring number 6. Mm. And once that was done, we were heading into Mark McGwire versus Sammy Sosa, you know, in baseball. So, and, you know, the Raptors were starting to take off, and Vinsanity. It's not that the Leafs were bad or anything. Like, people were still hyped on the Leafs in 99 and 2002. But, like, while basketball had these great storylines, and baseball, even more so after Jordan left, had these great storylines, hockey had, and it's another 2-1 game between the Devils and who cares?
Well, and you had, like, Darian Hatcher clubbing guys like Lindros over the head every night with their stick. And, like, you know, all these great players, Paul Kariya getting concussed. And there were these marvelous players that if they played in this era, like, imagine Eric Lindros playing in this era. If you couldn't, if you couldn't hook and hold him and whatever, like, it would just be ridiculous. Like, you know, he had the size and the hands, and you wouldn't be able to touch a player like that. And the funny, everyone points to, I'm sure you guys know this, like, the after that Canucks Rangers Stanley Cup final, Sports Illustrated had the cover saying that, like, the NHL is, like, overtaking the NBA or whatever. It was like the summer of 94, and they just right after that, the Devils won the next year. Oh, and it shocked everyone. The Devils beat the high-flying Detroit Red Wings, and it was like, what's going on?
So Lou Lamoriello destroyed the sport, is what you're saying.
Yeah, 95.
Yes.
They had the lockout right after that year. That cup final between the Canucks and the Rangers is one of the best series I've ever seen in my life. And it was to me, that's one of the pinnacles of the NHL. And that early 90s hockey with the Penguins, and even that Canadiens-Kings series, like, there were some really, really amazing games being played in the early 90s. And they lost all that momentum between the lockout. And then the dead puck era was the season right after that. And then the goaltending got so good, and they just didn't adjust.
Well, and wasn't, like, I think of some of the best games from my childhood, and I'm trying to think of a dead puck era one. Yzerman versus the Blues in game 7, double overtime.
Yep.
Wasn't it 0-0?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Heading into double overtime, yep. A game with Brett Hull, Wayne Gretzky, Steve Yzerman, Sergei Fedorov, get out of here.
Yep. No, yeah.
I'd so much rather watch hockey today.
I mean, look at the save percentages back then. Like, Hasek had like .933 and stuff like that. And you win the, like, there were like Roman Chechmanek had like a crazy save percentage. And like it was just like, there were these guys no one had ever heard of coming out of Europe and coming in and winning Veznas and stuff. And it was a weird time for hockey. And credit to the league that they, you know, they've adjusted and they've brought some scoring back. But I was just, to answer your question, Steve, I was looking at how much scoring is up. You know, they're at about 5.95 goals per game right now. In the 80s, it was 8 goals a game. In the 90s, it was around 7. Like, we're, you know, dead puck era was 5.4 and we're up to 5.9 something. So, you know, it's up like whatever that is, 8% or something from dead puck, but it's not that much.
Man, it really doesn't feel that way. That's interesting. I'm very surprised to hear that. Because I remember, like, you score 4, like, you shelled them when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's what you're talking about, Steve, it's not actually that dissimilar to what's happening in the NBA right now, where it's like the guys are just so much more skilled than they ever were before. It's like everyone can shoot threes. The game is up and down. It's 130 to 125. And, like, we're starting to see that with the NHL, where these guys come in like Matthews, and they are just, like, skilled to a degree that's like, same with McDavid, same with Marner. Like, you've never seen guys like this. Like, trying to think of, like, who is Austin Matthews like in NHL history? You can't really think of someone like he's kind of like this guy. He's not really like anyone. And even McDavid, like, seems like a one of one.
Well, and the skills coaches that those guys go to are changing the sport, because kids growing up right now are, you know, I want to be like McDavid. I want to learn how to play like McDavid. I want to learn how to play like Austin Matthews. But what I'm excited about, and I'm always intrigued by the impact this will have on the sport, because I think the NHL video games have an impact on the sport. And you're starting to see that with the equipment, and, you know, those funky skates, and guys are starting to put stuff on their heel. And because the sport is kind of, you know, conservative, we're like, ooh, there's like a stripey there. But it's going to get far more flamboyant than that. What I'm interested in from an on-ice perspective is watching, you know, 10 years from now, maybe 5 years from now, I'm excited to see a generation of elite level hockey players who grew up on Pavel Barber videos and stuff from Nasher.
YouTube, you know, yeah. It's a YouTube generation, right?
Yeah, just kids who grew up watching that stuff, and they were entertained by it. And then, you know, maybe later that day they get on the ice and they try it in practice.
You know what I've been getting in my Facebook feed and some of my social media feeds is ads for like hockey training videos. And it's guys I've never even heard of who are showing very specific ways to skate. Like there's one that's out there right now, and it's like, skate like Mitch Marner. Here's how you do it. And it shows the trainer kind of like twisting on his outside edge and like doing things. And it almost looks like figure skating or something, but they're like teaching the technical skills, and they're putting it right in front of people that are interested in that. It's just like a way to, like, I'd never even heard of anything like that when I was young and playing hockey. Like, it just didn't exist.
One of my favorite experiences I've ever had, like sort of behind the scenes, I was at the Leafs practice facility one summer for some sort of commercial shoot. I don't even remember what it was. And I was there early, and I was looking at one of the open pads of ice, and it was Barb Underhill working with, I think it was a couple Tampa prospects. This was years and years ago. I couldn't identify who they were. And the way she was skating made it look like it was these guys' first time on the ice. And it helped me realize, like, oh, there's so much left to unlock in the sport. You know, not that NHL players would ever be as good at skating as figure skaters necessarily, because skating is all they do, but like they really did look terrible in comparison to her. It was hilarious. And so if you're able to do the things that she can do and handle the puck and just friggin' wire it like Matthews or McDavid, no look ridiculousness like he did against the Flames the other night, there's so much to unlock in the sport.
McDavid always looks like he has like the turbo button in like NHL 90 whatever.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. So, Steve, what I want to ask you, because I think like you're the pulse of the fan base. Is that fair? That's fair, right?
Sure. Why not? It's a lot of pressure, but
yeah, I think it's
I'm the
fair.
Pulse of some of them.
All right. Well, I think what's been interesting with Mitch Marner is ever since the contract dispute, the tone has kind of changed. It feels a little bit amongst the fan base with Mitch Marner. Do you think that's fair? Have you sensed that? And if so, what do you think? Do you think that's just simply the contract and everything that went down?
No, it absolutely has. And I got to say, I'm really not for it. And I'm a big, I'm a big Mitch Marner apologist. So, and listen, the contract talks were awful, and we heavily criticized it on the podcast. And I did it in videos and interviews, and just the tactics that were used were so childish, so completely see-through. And I hated it. It was not a fun process to go through as a fan. Because I don't care. It's millionaires versus billionaires. I'm not cheering for either of you. I don't relate to either of you. And it was something I really hated. But once you get the money, uphold your end of the bargain. And last season, so many people were talking about how bad Mitch Marner was. And I'm watching going, I'm not sure. I don't see it really. Like, I guess you want more out of him. And there were some nights where I wanted more out of him. Now, this guy is legitimately in the Art Ross conversation, or he's in the can we have a trophy for the highest leading scorer who's not Connor McDavid? Huh. Like, whatever that trophy is. He's in the conversation for it. He's been top five in NHL scoring for like a month now. And I'm not sure what else he has to do. He's making superstar money and he's playing like a superstar. Him and Matthews are either the best or second best duo in the NHL right now. And I'm really not sure what else he has to do. Like, let the past be the past. The contract stuff was awful, but he's backing it up right now with his play.
I think that that's died down a little bit just because the success the team is having. And I think that what they need for that to go away even more so is some success in the playoffs that Marner is a part of.
I think some sex would help.
I said success. I did not. I'm not going to say it. Never mind.
I think it shows itself in different forms, right? So like right now there's no criticism and oh, Marner's a bum but I feel like he's not being given his props at all. Yes. Like this, the Matthews point streak, the Matthews goal per game thing, it is truly special, but this should be a two-man show. Like the billboard right now, like if you were to put up a billboard for the Leafs, it should be two guys. It shouldn't be one. It should be Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews. That's how you sell it. You got this guy who's special at one thing, and you have this guy who's special at another. And together they create magic every single night. This is why you buy tickets when you're allowed to. And this is why you turn on the stream and you turn on the TV every single time. It shouldn't just be one guy.
Yeah, and I don't think, to your point before, I don't know that the connection has been made yet to the fact that, yes, he's very highly paid, but he should be really highly paid. Like, he's one of the best players in the league. He should be paid like one of the best players in the league. Was he overpaid at the time? Yeah, maybe a bit. But, like, it's not, like, so crazy. And you look ahead, like, to the next few years. Like, him and Matthews, this is one of the crazy parts. Like, they're 23. Like, they're still, like, figuring it out and getting better and, like... But I think James is right. Like, the playoffs is going to determine so much. Like, if Matthews is 50 goals and Marner finishes second in the Art Ross and they don't have a good playoffs, nobody's going to care. And that's not totally fair, but it's not going to matter.
It is the big thing. It is the big thing, right? And everyone's, I think, talking about February games with anxiety that they shouldn't have until May.
Yes.
And yes, I know that that's me saying it. But you know, it's a restless, because of all the recent losses in the playoffs, it's a restless time to be a Leafs fan. And you know, here we have this first place team and people are afraid to enjoy it. Like I think that's what all these playoff failures have done, is now they finally have success and people are afraid to enjoy it. And they're not going to be able to enjoy it until they win a series.
You know what kind of works against Marner with the contract is what's happened with COVID and the shutdown and the cap being frozen for years on end. And like, I think if the cap was going up $3 or $4 million a year, which it probably was going to, and we were looking at a $90 million salary cap and the Leafs had more money to spend on some of the other depth players on the roster, the conversation's different. But none of that has anything to do with Mitch Marner. Like, Mitch Marner had nothing to do with the cap being flat, and like the Leafs didn't know that that was going to, Marner didn't know that was going to happen. So they negotiated based on thinking that the cap was going to go up.
Yeah. It's poor timing. Like, you're telling me Marner is going to get close to $11 million when Petrangelo only got eight? No. Come on now. Come on.
Yeah. That's one of the things that hockey is still like working its way through. It makes more sense to play I guess he was 21 or 22 at the time, a 22-year-old 10.8 than it does to pay a 31-year-old whatever Petrangelo got. But
I agree with that.
But we still like have like trouble like reconciling those things. Let me ask you, James, do you have anything like you want to specifically ask Steve before we go? Because we have like a couple minutes, and I have one more thing I want to ask.
When are we going to play Chell again? That's what I have to ask.
Well, Leo's sleeping through the night now. So.
Oh, lucky. Lucky.
Yeah, buddy's got a tooth poking out, so we'll see how long that lasts.
I have I have a 2-year-old that doesn't sleep through the night, so you're not out of the woods yet.
Oh, fun.
All right, here's my question. So we've touched on Matthews, we touched on Marner. Which of the starts is concerning you more, Nylander or Tavares, or neither?
Nylander, 100%. Tavares, yeah, Tavares. I watch him, and it's funny. You look at his point total; he's actually doing pretty good.
Yep.
He is struggling to find the back of the net himself, but he's creating and he's battling. He's so hard to beat in the corner, so hard to beat along the wall. There were two assists I can think of in particular where he just found a way to hypnotize two defenders, leaving one of his teammates wide open. He passes to them and it leads to a Leaf goal. So he's still incredibly good at so many of the things he does. Nylander, though, and especially last night, like there were a couple lackadaisical games that, you know, a certain portion of the fan base is going to hate. And I mean, they should. A player shouldn't be lackadaisical. But last night, he really looked like a guy who has absolutely no confidence, right? And I know Tavares looks like he's letting it bother him as well. But he's fighting through it. Whereas Nylander, there were a couple moments last night on the power play, 7 opportunities where he just looked confused. There was the one particularly bad one where he receives it on his forehand, you know, facing away from the goal he's shooting at, where last year he just hooks that puck, you know, 5-hole, hooks that puck, you know, into the net somehow, or at least gets a scoring chance, leads to a rebound. Instead, he just stood there frozen. So with him, it's mental, I think. So, that's good. It's less painful maybe to rehab than a wrist or something, a broken bone. It sounds like he's got his health, but right now he is really struggling to play as the player I think he can be.
And I think the concern with Nylander too is you look at that the contract shortened year he had, and sometimes it can snowball on him a little bit if there's some struggle, and you know it's almost like Keefe is challenging him a little bit here, and we'll see how he responds to that.
Yeah, well, and you know this is 2 games now that we've seen the loaded up top line, and I actually like last night they drew 3 penalties at 5-on-5, so even though they didn't score, they were doing things. But like Nylander in game 5 against Columbus, Nylander last night, nothing. And they keep issuing these challenges to him. I want to see him rise to the occasion.
Steve, you're a very busy man. We know you have to go. Next time we're going to have you on for longer than this, because that was great. That was fantastic. Thanks.
I know.
Thanks for joining us. It's good. Well, you know what? You know how it is. I mean, yeah. You guys have all kinds of different guests on your podcast. You don't know what the chemistry is going to be like, or if it's going to be like a good vibe or whatever. This is great. I mean, you get into the minutia and the weeds on the Leafs with us pretty easily.
Oh, it was a lot of fun, guys. And for everyone listening, and I'm not their pace, thanks for your patience.
Well, everyone can listen to you on the Steve Dangle podcast. I'm sure everyone listening to this already knows all about it and has it scheduled, locked down. So Steve, thank you. And let's try to do this again. Like keep the good times rolling where we bring you on and talk some minutia.
I love that word. Big word. Minutia. Big fan. Thanks. All right. I'll see you guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
All right. That was Steve Dangle. That was awesome.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So James, I asked Steve the question. Now I'll ask you. Do you agree with him? Like, is the start that's been more concerning to you Nylander or Tavares? Because for me, it's not actually Nylander.
It's a good question. I think you can make the case for both of them. I don't think that there's...
Sure. There's no right answer,
obviously. The concern with Tavares is he's making $11 million. I know everyone's saying, you know, he's got the points and whatever. I mean, he's on pace for... He's on like a 70-point pace over 82 games. Like, he's making $11 million. He's your captain. The concern is that he's never been the fastest guy in the world. He's never been the greatest skater. Is he declining? Because you're committed to him on the big money. And again, this is not Tavares' fault. It's not the Leafs' fault. But the cap is frozen potentially for years. The cap could be frozen for another 3 years. And the Leafs are tight against it. And they're having to go get all these bargain basement guys. And to like the front office's credit, they found a lot of those guys. But I don't know. I think I'm concerned about Tavares in like a more big picture sense, because like, it's, you know, is this going to be a problem? I think even if this is what Nylander is and he doesn't, he's like a really good, really, really good second line player that provides you some secondary scoring, that his contract is fine. I think Tavares, because of the position he plays and because of the money he makes and everything, I think that, you know, you really need him to be something special. And he's kind of just been, he's been fine.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, that's why to me, it's a little more concerning after last year as well, where there was bound to be some slippage from that first year, but now he's 30. And it's all the stuff you touched on. Like, I think some of this with Nylander is something we've been talking about in this market forever. And that's just like, there is a portion of the market that's just never going to really like him. There's just the way he looks, the way he acts, the emotion he doesn't show. I think it's all kind of held sometimes unfairly against him. Tavares is the bigger meatball, because like all this stuff you're talking about, like if you're having now to like protect lines and like you're not, I'm still not sure like how long he's going to play center. And,
oh, look
like,
at his minutes. Look at his minutes.
His minutes are way down.
I mean, if you're not playing your, if you're playing your $11 million guy, 17 minutes, that's not great.
So it'll be worth monitoring. And like you said, like he still has 17 points in 20 games. We're recording this before the second Calgary game. He's got 6 goals. Like some of the shooting percentage, like you've touched on in conversation with me, 5-on-5 is down. But it's worrisome after last year, because like you expect, like the point of this whole thing was like, you expect to be able to have this Matthews line that's going to be really good, and then still have like this Tavares line that's going to be really good. And right now you've only got that one domino working, which isn't a good way to put it, but yeah, you know what I mean. All right, James, are you ready for listener questions? Cause you just weren't saying anything, and it's a podcast and typically you're supposed to say something.
Oh, well, you didn't throw me a very good, you didn't leave me with much there. I thought you were going,
all right, actually,
you were going somewhere with that.
Wait, before we get to that, we should do our quote of the week and just touch briefly on it. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Can I answer my phone? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Well, yeah, he was just screaming in my ear, so I had to kind of start singing along with him. But you know, he's a big fan of that song. He plays it in the car sometimes, so you know, he definitely is a big Bon Jovi guy.
It's been a lot of ups and downs, you know, a lot of emotions and a lot of great teammates that's passed by.
Just being around this useful energy, that gets me excited. And they got a lot of it here, but yeah, just soak it all in. You know, I feel like I'm, you know, young again. It's a good feeling to be in.
I need more emotion. We need more emotion from everybody. We need people to get angry. We need people to step up and be mad and take it personally.
It was just okay. I've been waiting a long time for that. So you guys can package that someplace, okay?
I mean, he's, picking goalies apart, they don't really stand a chance. I mean, he's doing it consistently too, which is, unbelievable. And with his shot and where he scores from is the best I've seen.
All right, so that was William Nylander talking about Austin Matthews. We were talking about his greatness this year with Steve Dangle. The ease to which he's scoring is something. And the only reason, not the only reason, but some of the reasons I do think he'll come close is the goalies in this division are not great, nor are some of the teams defensively.
And anyway, my concern is that he's going to get like 40 and 55 games and people are going to be like, oh, he didn't get 50. But it's like 40 and 55 games is ridiculous. It's like a 65 goal pace, or it's pretty close to that. Like, it's
Well, and what did he have in his last 56 games last year, James? I believe he had 40.
Right. But that's
insane.
It's very, very, very good.
He very good. All right. On to the pod bag. James, you're up.
Okay. What do we got here? A lot of people want to know about adding trades. When do you expect Nick Robertson to get called up? What about Timothy Liljegren?
Well, Liljegren's not happening anytime soon.
Yeah, if they keep having injuries on defense. Who would you play next if there's another injury on the blue line? Like, let's say Muzzin's out, Sandin's out. Let's say that Bogosian goes down next game. Who do you call up?
I think they'd play Marincin.
That's not what I asked you. I said, who would you call up?
Rosen.
Hmm.
You're not playing him. Like, that's... You and I were talking about it recently with Joseph Wall. It kind of makes more sense for him to be with the Marlies at a certain point, like instead of being the taxi squad goalie. Like, he is a prospect who needs to play. Now, the Marlies season just started, so you can't really blame them. But at a certain point, that's something I would like to see. But as to Robertson, I think it's going to be soon. I just think they need him. Like, I feel like they're kind of missing a piece exactly like him. They just have all these guys, especially with the injuries, that are just kind of still finding their way. Like, Ilya Mikheyev offensively hasn't been there. Jamie Vesey, it hasn't worked out. Barabanov is what he is. Travis Boyd and Jason Spezza are fourth liners. Like, they need a guy like him, maybe even to play with Tavares and Nylander.
I mean, I think that they should get Robertson in, and I think they should see what he can do. And they've got a hole right now on the wing with one of their top two lines where, like give him some of those. Instead of putting Barabanov there, put someone who's got some offensive potential. And, you know, every time Robertson's played to date, well, I shouldn't say every time, because in the playoffs he played with some decent players. But I would just try and get him some more minutes and get him more comfortable in the NHL and see if he can make an impact. Even if you're playing him in games against a team like Ottawa that's struggling, like get him some confidence in the NHL that he belongs, because I don't think that Robertson has that yet. He's looked very good in the AHL from what I've seen. Question two. Will Jason Spezza be back next year? I think as long as he's playing as well as he's playing, he can, anyone, as long as he wants to sign for a league minimum deal again and again, I think the Leafs will take him back every year that he's able to do that. He's playing 10 minutes a game. He's got 11 points in 19 games. You're not going to find another player that's that effective at that price. I say just bring him back as long as he still is effective.
Plus the intangibles, James. The intangibles.
We've talked about this, I think, on the podcast, but Jason Spezza just seems like such a great guy. Like, he just... The players love him, and my interactions with him before we got kicked out of the dressing room because of COVID were really, really positive. And I talked to some people in Ottawa about him, and they're like, yeah, like he's the nicest player I've ever covered. And, you know, he's made a real impact.
He is on the ice every day. It's insane. Well, even the days when it's just the guys who didn't play the night before, he goes out.
Well, he's in the gym for like hours and hours and hours too. Like, the other players can't believe his work ethic. I mean, it shows. Most of the guys that are effective into their late 30s and early 40s, they're off ice. What they do with their bodies is the reason why they're still effective. Like, you're not going to see guys who dog it in the off ice training be effective into their late 30s. It's not going to be possible anymore.
Next question.
Someone named TJ Hody asks, what do you think of TJ Brody so far? I like TJ Brody. I like him a lot. I think he's a good partner for Riley, where Riley gets freelancing and goes up in the offensive zone, and Brody is the last man back, and he does a really nice job playing against two-on-ones against them. And I like the way that he can make some really nice passes out of his own zone. And I don't know about Brody on the power play. I don't think that that's something that I would continue to do, but even strength, I really, really like him. TJ Brody's the kind of guy that, when I grew up watching hockey, those are the kind of defensemen that I really liked and gravitated towards. The guys that don't always get a lot of attention, but who are really, really important to winning games.
I'm in agreement. I honestly, of all the players that they added, I like watching him most. Like, he just does all these little subtle things. He, like, his stick, some of the stuff he does with his stick, like, I think I'm going to write about it. I've clipped, like, I've saved all these things in my notes, James, from the games. He just does, he has all these little moves that, like, if you're not really watching closely, you'd be justified to miss. But yeah, I just think he's been
exactly. He's unpredictable, right? Like you know, he gets a forechecker up on him. And you're like, oh, this doesn't, looks like he's in trouble here, and looks like they're going to take the puck from him, and he makes a nice play with it, and he's very, very gifted. You know, and there was a lot of talk about how gifted he was in terms of his skating and everything, and that profile we did on him, which I encourage people to go read if they haven't, at The Athletic, theathletic.com/LeafReport for.
Nice, James.
Yeah. We actually, I should promo for people that are listening to this on Tuesday, we have a big feature on Justin Hall that's running on Wednesday morning. And it's the same kind of thing where Joshua Cloak and I dug in deep on Justin Hall and wrote about him. So check that out in the morning. Paul Zhang wants to know, should we start to panic about the Leafs? I don't think so.
I got to say, James, though, I was really surprised. Maybe I shouldn't be. At the level of whatever you want to call it after that game against Ottawa. That was, I know we talked about it on here. I was surprised it when it was as anxious as it's an angsty.
It was a historical comeback. It was the Senators' greatest comeback in franchise history.
I know, but it feels like shit happens in games. Like it just.
But the thing is that we talked about this last year. The Leafs haven't earned the benefit of the doubt. They haven't earned that. Like they just. Like having a good first 14 games or whatever, it doesn't mean that people aren't going to doubt you and criticize you. And like they've shown us this show so many times that like you'd have to, it's not like Men in Black, like mind erase every season and you forget about what happened the year before. Like it's natural for people to doubt this team.
All right. That's fair.
Matthew Byron asks, where do you see Alex Galchenyuk fitting in on the Leafs? Can he fit in the top six with all the injuries, or is he a depth piece? He also asks, what's the plan for Travis Dermott at the trade deadline?
You can tackle one of those if you want.
Maybe you can paraphrase what Sheldon Keefe said about Galchenyuk today. He had a long answer about it. I was sort of half paying attention because I've been doing a bunch of other things this afternoon. I mean, Keefe basically said they're trying to get Galchenyuk kind of acclimatized to how the Leafs play, and they don't want to just throw him in. And his answer actually made a lot of sense. He talked about how much Galchenyuk's bounced around. And the problem with Galchenyuk is he's not good defensively. And that's not going to fly for Sheldon Keefe or for on this Leafs team. You know, they're not going to be like the Coyotes were a couple of years ago and play him a whole bunch of minutes and he puts up 25 goals and he's minus 30. Like they don't have any interest in that. So what they're trying to do is see if Galchenyuk, and the answer is he would be a depth piece just because he's not that good defensively. So that's the concern with him. They're not going to be able to play him on a checking line. So is there some sort of a sheltered scoring line they can find a fit for him on? Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, he was playing 9.5 minutes a game for Ottawa this year. So it's chance. It's like there's no downside for them.
He's on a train right now that is a ticket out of the league into the KHL, and it's going to be up to him whether or not he stays on that train or not, because he's running out of chances. He's been on 7 teams in 2.5 years. Like that's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't care where he was picked.
Yeah. Well, and it's very possible the Leafs might have taken him had he been there at 5. But anyway, the Dermott thing I think is interesting. I feel like he's become a little overrated in this market. We still don't know what he is. Like we still, all the tools are there, but that's all it is at this point. And that's not his fault. Like he's still really young in the league, but I don't think it's inconceivable that he would be traded. I don't think it's likely, but I don't think it's inconceivable.
Well, the concern is you're going to lose him in the expansion draft potentially. Right. So, I mean, he's 24 years old now. He's not like, this is supposed to be the year where he shows he's more than a third pair guy, and I haven't seen it yet this year.
I've liked how he's performed in like, but they've really, really sheltered him and kept his minutes way down. So that kind of tells you a little bit about what they're trying to do. Like they're just trying not to throw too much onto his shoulders right now. And it'll be interesting to see how much he plays without Muzzin. Like that first game without Muzzin, he played under 12 minutes. So. All right, One more question, James.
This is a good question. This is going to be a bit of a spicy one, so I'm going to throw it to you and then like go have a sandwich and leave you to answer it. John Poon asks, is Riley the Leafs' DeMar DeRozan? And if so, who are you looking for in return? You might want to explain that one a little bit. But
well, so the implication is DeMar was this really effective scorer for the Raptors, but not in the way that basketball was trending. He didn't shoot threes. He took a lot of mid-range jumpers. And in the playoffs, he kind of became – all that stuff could be taken away and was taken away, and he was less effective in the playoffs. I don't think he's and obviously he'd played for the franchise a long time. He loved the team.
Well, the biggest, I think, crossover comparison is that
– defensively, he wasn't great.
And also, like, should you trade him to get another piece that is a better fit for what your team is and will help you win in the postseason? That's the.
I think the answer is no. And that trade is not. There's nothing analogous or whatever.
Well, the only thing is that like Riley's not great defensively, and his contract is going to come up soon, and he'll be moving out of his prime when that next contract comes.
And so you just don't sign him.
And it could be a lot of money. But, I mean, like, so people could be saying, like, with a year left on his deal, do you move him and get, a really, really good asset in return?
But this is always the problem with those conversations. What is that asset? Like, why is a team trading you a better player for a guy whose contract's going to be up in a year, who's nearing...
Maybe it's not a better player. Maybe it's a player who's of complementary value that you can have under contract longer. Maybe it's someone who's going to make less money than Riley's going to make. Maybe another team values what Riley brings more because they don't have enough offensive pieces on their roster, which the Leafs do.
Good luck with that, man. Good luck.
Well, the alternative is letting Riley walk for nothing at the end of next season. So
yeah, or signing him.
But I think that if you're signing him, the number probably starts with a 7. And I find it really difficult to make those cap numbers work with the rest of the Leafs roster right now. Unless you're looking at trading one of the forwards potentially,
or one of the defensemen.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they could. You know,
like, I mean, Muzzin's 32 now. Like,
yeah,
let's remember that.
And those contracts are structured in a way that, you know, there's not a lot of money left in the final years of the deals for Muzzin and Brody. So, I mean, they even structured the Muzzin contract so that he's eligible to be exposed in the expansion draft. You know, like the Leafs really left themselves, not that they're going to, but they left themselves some openings there for Brody and Muzzin where they can potentially expose those guys.
All right, James, this has been very fun. Special episode. Keith Tkachuk. Ooh. He was on the Athletic Hockey Show, and Pierre-Luc Dubois joined the two-man advantage. So those are a couple extra podcasts for league-wide stuff.
I like Keith Tkachuk. You
want to check out.
Have you talked to Keith Tkachuk very much?
No, but I used to like to watch him play. Like he was like if you're like defining power forward.
I did this one story once. I don't know if you remember it. It was about hockey players losing teeth and kind of like the surgery they had and like all.
I do because I really remember the picture.
Yeah.
At the top of the story.
Right. So that was on the front page of the Globe and Mail when I did that story, and the whole top of the story is Keith Tkachuk, and he didn't know me, and I didn't know him, and I called him out of the blue, and I said. Basically, the story with Keith Tkachuk is that he took a puck off of his face and it went off his face and went in the net and it was a goal. And it was the last NHL game he ever played because it shattered his jaw so dramatically that he just decided to retire. He was like 40 years old. He had this amazing career and his career ended with this catastrophic injury and it was extremely difficult for him. And like I said, I didn't know him, and we had this long conversation about it, and just he wasn't afraid to be really honest and kind of like, I don't know, vulnerable is the right word, but he really talked about how difficult it was, and it turned into a great story. And I know his son is not the most popular player in the world right now. You think Brady's not that popular? I mean, he's not.
I love how they play, but like they're exactly the type of players that piss opposing fan bases off.
Yep. And I don't know that Keith was quite the level of shit disturber that his sons are proving right now in the league. But anyway, that's my Keith Tkachuk story. Is that I worked with him on that one story, and he was wonderful to work with, and he seems like a great guy.
Without looking, how many goals do you think he scored?
Oh, he's 540?
Very close, James. Jeez, 538.
Yeah. Wow. Because that's in my story. His 538th goal went off his face and shattered his whole face. It's crazy. You should go look. Like, if you look up that play, it's like his teammates are all celebrating and he's on the ground. Like, he like couldn't even stand. He said, how many goals go off a guy's face? And it's like the last goal that a guy who had 540 goals ever scored. Like, it's crazy.
I was gonna say that Muzzin got hit in the face by him, but it wasn't. It was actually Tyler Toffoli. That's how he got his face, broken bone in his face the other day. So,
but it didn't turn into a goal. I wonder how many goals in NHL history have.
Well,
have
it did for faces. It eventually became a goal for Montreal, but not like directly in.
Right.
So, but yeah. All right. Well, next week, James, is going to be a busy one for the Leafs. They're in Western Canada. They play four times.
Yeah.
Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday.
All right. Well, I think we'll be back on Tuesday next week.
Yep. Sounds good. And if you haven't subscribed to The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/leafreport. Thank you for listening. Everyone keep well. James, sayonara.